I'm not sure which would be worse, but I am sure that Canada deserves better than that.
Are you going after them?
Yes, I will have a meeting with my legal team.
All right, we're going to cut that in, cut into that, because we want to get into Vijay Singh. Sorry, Vijay Sharma. And, excuse me.
This is not the final round.
George Galloway will be delivering his speech, 18 months delayed, at Trinity St. Paul's. That's a church at 427 Bloor West, just west of Spadina, at 3 p.m. this afternoon. And it'll also be available on live stream at rabble.ca. This clip here is coming courtesy of rabble.ca as well. So I would encourage people to check out the stream. I have a feeling the church is going to be packed. It's not a huge, it's not a very large venue. So, yeah, participate in democracy in action here and in Toronto. You know, excuse me for, you know, playing these international issues on you when we're basically here to talk about city issues. But I have a feeling Vijay understands what how it all connects, eh?
Absolutely, Shannon. I'd like to look at Toronto in the international context simply because so many international laws, international regulations, and international bodies are going to affect and are affecting right now what's going on in this city. So we can talk about bike lanes, running in parks, $50 rebates to renters, but we should also talk about, say, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, ICLEI at ICLEI.org, ICLEI.org, at the corner of Richmond and Spadina, which is a UN body that is responsible for local environmental initiatives. So the light bulbs, the low-flow toilets, and a lot of the other green initiatives are being managed at the international level. And I really think that our country and certainly our city should have more control over that. And I don't think it can be managed well by international bodies who are so far removed from our environment and our everyday lives.
Microphone, please. Yeah, Vijay, you're right on. I'm surprised how Toronto is sort of helpless in this sort of sea of debris that just flows by, coming from, you know, international. It's amazing how we can, our federal government is signing away our local rights. It's just incredible how that's going on, and it's basically put me in a position of being upset about how Toronto is just sort of dangling on the end of a string, and it seems quite helpless, and it's bizarre. You know, meanwhile we're the metropolitan center of a major country in the world, and you know, this place should be a seat of power.
Well, I certainly think that we are under attack by, you know, multinational corporations and other big institutions who are essentially donating money to political parties, and then those parties are centrally controlled. So if you're a member of parliament or a member of provincial parliament, if I was to run for parliament, for example, and I was to be elected as a young liberal, then I would normally be told by the party and you know, definitely told by the party whip how to vote on certain issues, how to talk about certain issues, and what to think. But at the municipal level, at the city level, the candidates are not part of any parties. They may sympathize. They may, you know, say they affiliate themselves with the Conservatives, the Liberals, the NDP, whomever, but they are not officially part of any political party. They are individuals who can be controlled by the people who vote for them in the 44 wards in Toronto. So it's important to make that distinction. If you know, a lot of people think that the most important elections are the federal ones, when in fact they are the least important elections. And over the last 5 years, Prime Minister Harper has certainly shown his ability to crack down on other elements of his administration and prevent them from speaking freely or doing what they want to, and recently cracked down on science and wanted to make sure anything dealing with climate change or global warming came through the PMO. So you know, if you vote, you know, for a prime minister, you know, it's arguable that they will be controlled. But if you vote for your city councilor through part of an ongoing process, say, you know, spending an hour a week or just working with your neighbors, you can pretty much keep them in check. And I have some of that information on my website, whatyouwantabelievein.com, where I recommend we do that. And I recommend we be someone who helps them resist the influence of corporate lobbyists.
whatyouwantabelievein.com?
That's correct, sir.
Ah, I was looking for that. I found your blog spot, but I didn't get to the what you want to believe in.
I think we want to believe that we can handle this stuff. I mean, I think that I don't think we're helpless. I think that we can feel helpless because of the size of the problem. But as long as we have, modern communication tools and the will to communicate, then we can expose enough truth to prevent the majority of us from going along with the lies, which is really how this sort of global system of globalization works. NAFTA was supposedly, going to get us more jobs and be a boost for our economy, but we all saw a massive job drain, brain drain, and our industrial base being destroyed, our manufacturing sector being destroyed. So we're moving towards an essentially pure service economy where we just push pieces of paper or sell each other services. And so, again, when some people see these conclusions before, and if we listen to them carefully, we can hear them make more sense with their sales pitch against some of these ideas than the majority of the sales pitches we hear in the corporate media.
It's incredible. When the whole free trade thing came down, it was quite obvious that the manufacturing base of Ontario was going to dry up. And the politicians just sat there, the Ontario politicians, absolutely did nothing for the longest period of time until they realized that they were so far in debt that they might never get out. And then they decided to adjust the actual taxation of the economy to, take the money off the service industry instead of the manufacturing base. It's just sort of a good example of politics at its sort of not lowest, but just at its sort of base level, where it's cowtailing to public opinion or something. It's more of a, not a lottery, but I guess it's just it's like a student election or something. But it's a popularity contest, really.
Well, I think that's the thing, is that, they're running on personalities. If you even look at the mayor race here in Toronto, we're supposed to call each other stupid or hate each other for choosing either Ford or Smitherman. So if you're a Ford guy, then you're like, I can't believe you'll choose Smitherman, you're so stupid. And if you're a Smitherman guy, I can't believe you're going to choose Ford, right-winger, blah, blah, blah. And there's some truth to that because, they do represent different sides of the political spectrum. But, what's obscured in that type of debate is their policies. Who are they? Where did they come from? Why were they in city council for so many years? And yet, why were they so quiet about all the waste and corruption they're making so much noise about now? And why are they making so much noise about it late in the election? And why were the elections so boring until the last month or so, as even four former mayors admitted in a Globe and Mail roundtable discussion on September 17th. You can see a copy on my site at whatyouwantabelievein.com, as well as my sort of real-time analysis, where I was shocked to hear four former mayors of Toronto spending about 45 minutes discussing the campaign up until September 17th, hosted by the Globe and Mail in a discussion. And the article, I guess the transcript and the audio is up there. You can download the MP3, but it was entitled "The Campaign's Biggest Loser So Far: Toronto Itself." And so that was what the Globe and Mail's headline was, based on the discussion of four former mayors about the campaign, the mayoral campaign, up until September 17th, 2010. So you get an idea that these candidates are trying to make it a superficial debate, trying to bore a lot of us, turn off a lot of the electorate. And if they're not trying to, whoever is trying to, or if nobody's trying to, that still shouldn't be the outcome that we have to deal with.
Oh, yeah, it's incredible. If you follow the campaign, you would have very little idea of what the city is about or how it functions. I'm not sure how much you know, but I'm under the impression that pretty much half the budget in the city is police, or close to that. And then the rest, another half of that half, or even more, the next biggest chunk would be TTC, which leaves, about 20% of the budget is the rest of the city. It's so the big issues are policing and TTC in Toronto. And you haven't heard, we heard a little bit about TTC. it's kind of sad what these politicians are actually saying about the TTC. And the rest of the whole city is just sort of like nothing. I haven't heard a thing. It's all about their little personalities.
Yeah, and little nickel and dime things. I mean, there's a lot of common sense solutions when it comes to bike lanes. I mean, Smitherman promised a $50 rebate to renters paying $1,000 or more per month for rent. So, I mean, these are the types of sort of nickel and dime, you know, things were being thrown on the TTC. You know, my answer to CP24 and CTV News when they interviewed me briefly, like they did many other candidates, was that I think that existing TTC infrastructure needs to be shored up before we talk about any sort of big expansion or fantasy projects that sink us further in debt. And I happened to be coming back from a friend's birthday party. It was around 2:30 in the morning at the corner of Young and Bloor, and two TTC buses drove by us, you know, saying not in service. And there's about 30 of us, you know, at the bus stop there, heading west rather along Bloor. And I stopped and thought, and it's nothing personal against the TTC, but I just stopped and thought that, you know, 2:30 in the morning. You know, a bunch of Torontonians who've been, you know, out at the bars having a good time, spending their hard-earned money and enjoying time with their friends, should have, you know, regular, fast, not crowded bus service when they're leaving their party after dropping 50, 60 bucks or whatever at the bar and having a great time. Getting home should be more enjoyable. And so that's just one small aspect where I'd say let's beef up existing service so we minimize the number of complaints. And then once we have an idea of what works, we can build upon that.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the Transit City as proposed by Mayor Miller?
I am familiar with it. But again, I'm half and half on some of these things. I believe that we do need strong public transit, and I've benefited from it, and I still use it, you know, a fair bit, you know, these days. However, I also know that part of UN Agenda 21, that's the United Nations Agenda for the 21st Century, is to push a lot of environmental initiatives and sustainability initiatives in order to force us to use less, and force us to accept a lower standard of living, force us to stop driving, force us to live stacked and packed in compact cities in a country where we have a massive amount of land for a very small amount of people. We should all be able to own a house in this country. It's not it's a non-issue for me in terms of at least theoretically thinking about it, and so on. And so, you know, when it comes to these initiatives, I always like to look for the source of these initiatives. You know, what Transit City, as we know it or as we might read about it in the paper, you know, will be, you know, 3-4 bullet points. But the actual legislation behind something like Transit City or any new initiatives of that nature will be much, you know, larger. It'll be much more detailed. And so I'd like to look at, you know, many more of those details in detail before I sort of officially comment on Transit City. So I'm pro-transit, but I'm also pro, you know, us not getting into the habit of using less for, you know, sustainability reasons when, you know, most of the time these ideas are pushed. It's wealthy people pushing them everywhere through our culture, so they can get us to use less so they can steal it.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Again, back to the incredible resources in this city and how they're squandered and sort of spread out in kind of the wrong directions. Do you wish to talk about the federal government just, what did you call, put out a report that glossed over the senatorial mayor Art Eggleton had put together a report from his Senate position with a few other, a conservative senator, put together a 72-point plan on how to fight poverty in the nation. And it had sat on the conservative government's desk for about a year or so, and they finally brought their comments down where they rejected all 72 points or 49 points of this poverty action plan. Are you familiar with that at all?
I did read something about that, yeah. And you know, I'll say that there are many ways to approach the issue of poverty, but, you know, one of the best ways is to create a better system of free enterprise. So, you know, instead of, you know, needing government housing for people or special government programs for people, which are often inefficient, which often lead to, you know, just a bloating of those programs that actually depend on, you know, the need for the problem to survive themselves. So that sort of, you know, changes how they approach it in many ways. If you're a government department, you don't necessarily want to solve the problem you're working on because you put yourself out of business. So there are many ways to approach the issue of poverty. And certainly I think that because it is, you know, a life or death issue for some, it can affect their health, it can affect the quality of their lives. And it is a painful issue. I mean, poverty is something that can be intergenerational and can destroy opportunity. So we should use some government programs to, you know, alleviate immediate poverty and get people in a position where they can be productive members of you know, our culture as they see fit. But ultimately, a better system of free enterprise, lower taxes. You know, we pay about 60% of our income in total in taxes in this country, and I don't think we get, you know, that much back in services. I'm saying I'm ballparking on average. And so if you give people more money and they have more of a chance to spend, to invest in their education, in their leisure, in their fun, you know, then you know, they will generate wealth. But if you tax them, and then if you put in government solutions to poverty, what often happens is, you know, you have these solutions being the thing to do, and those people are stuck in that trap. And so many good people work there. I worked in the homeless industry myself, you know, a few years ago, for medical director of Seton House, for a project to help make sure they could have better care whenever they in their transient mode. I went to different shelters or hospitals throughout the city. So, you know, I've been involved in some of these efforts, but I also know that there is some institutional resistance to what would be called radical, but if you look at the problem, what should be called practical solutions to eliminating this problem, as opposed to managing to do the best you can with the solution and then tinkering with the solutions that are sort of approved by the government and endorsed by the media.
Yeah, so you're... basically saying teach him how to fish instead of throwing him a fish.
That's a much better and faster way to say it. So I appreciate that, Shannon. That's why you're the radio host, and I'm just the humble guest.
Well, it's my policy to let the other guy do the talking. And also, it just seems off. This is sort of my own thinking here, but Toronto being the center of Canada and pretty much the base of poverty in Canada. I would assume that, like, most of the poverty does exist in our region. That for a federal institution, the federal government, to be throwing away billions of dollars at this sort of self-perpetuating poverty issue. Meanwhile, it would be the city of Toronto that would be able to probably deal with the issue the best if they were able to retain the funds to actually, again, it's funny how you tied the tax issue into the poverty issue, but the amount of money that Toronto sends out of the city and out of the province to the federal government, and then how it dribbles back, and it's insufficient to actually deal with the issues of our city itself.
I read an article saying 92% of our tax money goes out, we only get 8% back of the tax money we send the federal government, and I was quite shocked by that statistic. I think it was in the Toronto Star. But I also read another great article in the Toronto Star by Ms. English, which listed my name among 39 candidates for mayor on there, and a link to the city's website, and basically advocated the idea that, you know, who are these independent candidates running for mayor? Who plunked down $200, you know, even if they don't have a chance to win? Wasn't the point of them running to introduce good ideas into the debate? And if that was the point of them running, then isn't it a good idea that we at least take a look at their ideas? So you can have Ford, Smitherman, you know, Rossi, Pantalone, and you can have these folks sort of playing a little safer and smarter, according to many people, because, you know, people will say this is politics. You've got to say certain things and talk a certain way to get elected and so on. But at the same time, you know, if you acknowledge that construct and even think that construct is what it's supposed to be, you can still acknowledge that, you know, 35 other people, you know, plunked down $200 plus, tried to raise money and are only doing it to at least introduce ideas into the debate that, you know, should be good ideas for our city, or at least should be considered to see if they are good ideas for our city. And so there is some encouragement out there from mass media circles with respect to, you know, looking at solutions to this problem. Because what we mostly get from the corporate media and from the government are definitions of the problem. You know, we get very academic definitions, and this is the reason for poverty. This is the reason we're having trouble solving this. This is the reason why this situation is messed up. And, you know, when you just get that over and over and over again, it tends to make you a little defeatist, because you're never transcending that. It's sort of a learned acceptance and a learned helplessness. And so many of the other candidates who are running for mayor are trying to challenge that simply because they've thought of it. And if anybody in Toronto, you know, tried to do this, they could, I'm sure, think of a couple of good ideas for the city. If any residents of the city, lifelong residents like myself, tried to run for mayor, they would have a couple of good ideas to throw into the kitty, just based on their understanding of a place they've lived for, you know, a certain amount of time. So, you know, there are ways to use the independent media and independent candidates to give us some hope when it really looks like, you know, we're going to choose the lesser of two evils and then be stuck with, you know, evil running our city for 4 years, which I think is a mistake without at least making sure that evil acts less evil by bringing them some fresh ideas and saying, look, even though this guy didn't win, we still want to do what he recommends.
Yeah, it's like, the other 35 candidates could be introducing issues that the front runners need to deal with, or, you know, maybe even possible modification of their platform through the sort of enlightenment or education of the lower sort of candidates, if you follow what I'm saying. Actually, I'm going to get into some music now. We're going to take a break. It's 9:04, so we're pretty much halfway through the show, and we're just going to take a little break. And actually, this is a good little track. I think we'll have some fun with it, and we'll be back shortly. You're listening to Plunder News with Vijay Sharma, our mayor, a candidate out of CKLN, and my name is Shannon. You're listening to Plunder News. And play that. And where's the chair? I gotta get it up. Up, 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 up.
City Hall. Word on the street is that you've got the unofficial Toronto anthem, TO'd from an abdominal feature to self. You know I gotta hear that. Check it out.
Whether you call it Toronto, the T.T.O.
True face capital like Theo.
Oh,
the big smoke, hot town,
mega city.
It's where I'm from, frankly, couldn't pick a better city
to call home. From the 401 of Sky Dome,
Scarborough,
over west to Etobicoke,
and all the parts lying in between.
I'm from Toronto.
Abs, let me paint
the scene.
Spent
my childhood in Greek Town, but now a West End denizen. Buying cocoa bread and patties in Kensington and peddling westbound the Lansdowne. Shut off the disc man to allow familiar sounds to enter my eardrums, hearing the humming ding of the 506 old men grumbling. In Italian and Portuguese, over coffees at corner cafes. Change the sensory focus to olfactory. Factories pumping chocolate into the air. This cavalry and Nestle in a two-click radius, making the air seem like something out of the craziest. Dream of Roald Dahl, sun lower now, paint you with a golden brow, tightly holding down my Duffer Mall Kangol knockoff. To block off the rays, change lanes, turn left at the no frills. Perched at the mouth of Parkdale, only the hill separates me from home and a hot shower. But I stop to watch the tower for a few seconds, standing majestically till the car horn snaps me from my reverie. Push off the curb to my pad below. So glad that I live in T.O. Toronto, the T.T.O.
Screwface capital like Theo.
Oh,
the big smoke, hot town,
mega city.
It's where I'm from, frankly, couldn't pick a better city
to call home.
From the 401 of Sky Dome,
Scarborough,
over west to Etobicoke,
and all the parts lying in between.
I'm from Toronto.
Notes, yeah, that's the team. Main Street, where I'm from, where I live, where I sung, where I spit, where I hung as a kid. And if you wanna go, it's just west of Scarborough, the home of bombs, Joe Lost Souls, and Lawn Gnomes, the East End. I got to call home, but it spots I long for while across Toronto. I'm down at Queen West just to take a graffiti, then to the Danforth for my favorite tzatziki.
Live from the center of the universe. I'm from Toronto. Come on, man, do your worst. Young disc jockeys play wrist hockey. Train on the tabletops, making the tables top.
I'll buy my records at.
Rotate this and play D. That's where you can locate this. And if I need a flick, I go to Queen Fit, a suspect. Hey, yo, Roche, what's next?
Let's take him to the comic book store. I go to comics and more. A Greenwood, make a cross at Danforth.
And if you down for it,
I'll show you how the city does.
All the way from Chinatown
to Little India.
From the beaches
to Roncesvalles.
Park to the
Rex to
River to
Rosedale.
Really, you should come to our town before the Leafs win the cup and we tear the place down.
Toronto, 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 product of its people. Bourke Street, Bathurst Street, Queen Street, Parliament Street, Yonge Street. Welcome to Toronto. Welcome
whether
to
you
Toronto.
Call it Toronto,
the T-Dot,
T-O, Screwface Capital, like Theo, the big smoke,
hot town,
Omega City. It's where I'm from, frankly, couldn't pick a better city
to call home.
From the 401 to Sky Dome,
Scarborough,
over west to Etobicoke, and all the parts lying in between. We're from Toronto, and T-O's the theme.
That's right. Welcome to Toronto. Welcome to Toronto, brother.
CKLN 88.1 FM, Plunder News. My name is Shannon. Special guest Vijay Sharma, our mayoral candidate for the city of Toronto. It's a pleasure having you in the studio with us. Thank you very much for coming down, by the way.
Thank you so much, Shannon.
So we might as well jump right on the platform. What issues are you running on, and like, how would you, you know, present yourself out of the box?
Well, I definitely present myself as someone who's been a lifelong Toronto resident, a journalist, an activist, an artist, a philosopher in the city. I know this city well. You know, with my colleagues at Toronto Truth Seekers, right after April of 2009, when I declared for mayor informally then, you know, I put out a little press release, and then I spoke at the Freedom Fest in early May of 2009. And then I went into action with my colleagues at TorontoTruthSeekers.com during the H1N1 pandemic downtown. And we set up a little table there, a little umbrella, a little truth umbrella. And myself and my colleagues from TorontoTruthSeekers.com, I handed out literally thousands and thousands of vaccine exemption forms and flyers and DVDs every Saturday starting in July of 2009. And we're still on the streets every Saturday now with a small group of, you know, anywhere from 10 to, you know, 20, 30 at times, people who get out there just for a few hours on a Saturday and let their fellow Torontonians know some of what they found. And so what we tried to do is we tried to react to what we thought was a risk from the H1N1 vaccine, which we thought was possibly dangerous and untested. And it proved to me that there is a market for this information in this city. You know, the radio shows like yourself, like your show, like my show here at CKLN when I had it before I started running, you know, like the Conspiracy Culture book and DVD store, like Richard Serrett, like Art Bell. There is a huge audience for this information in this city, and there is a huge audience for information in this city that doesn't normally gravitate towards this information, because when you're standing on the street at the, you know, south west corner of Yonge and Dundas, you know, for, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours, you know, plus a day every Saturday, you know, from July until, you know, today, you know, you get an idea of what ordinary people just there on a Saturday walking by are interested in. Because if they want to talk to you, they will. If they don't, they won't. And so, you know, there's all these sort of real-time metrics when it comes to understanding the people of Toronto. And I do know that if we share information in calm and consistent ways with people, if we share it on a piece of paper or DVD and don't necessarily engage in conversations that we may not want to have or we may not have the knowledge base to have. So, you know, if I know a lot about something and you don't, it's hard for us to have a conversation about it. But if I say, hey, take a look at the work of, you know, Dr. Russell Blaylock, Sherry Tenpenny, Andrew Molden, you know, on this DVD, and hear them explain it. And then if you want to talk about it, we can. And if you don't, at least you'll make smarter choices going forward on this whole vaccine issue. So we kind of really tested that, and we were fairly successful and known as one of the most active groups doing this sort of thing in the world. And then for the G20 summit recently, you know, I was postering and flyering like a maniac before it during it and after it to make sure it never happened again, because I saw that as the most traumatic event in this city's history, where, you know, 20,000 cops, troops, mercs, and spooks were sent to lock down the city like a giant prison, kick us out of downtown for a week in the summer. And you know, I've seen how our police has acted before then and since then, and they don't normally act like they did at the G20 summit, but, you know, most of us will, quote unquote, you know, do our jobs. And so we have to make sure, as my first platform priority, that we, you know, we keep an eye on what those jobs are. So I really want a full, you know, inquiry into the G20 summit, which I, you know, looked at very, very closely, sort of the G20 martial law. And then following that, the Carabana martial law light, where there was a way too big of a police presence there. Very, very peaceful. Nothing happened between 1,000 cops and 10,000 young black people partying. But they shouldn't have been forced to hang out with each other in such close quarters. The cops should have been nearby as opposed to forced to mingle with the crowds aggressively. So it seems like someone's trying to use our authorities, our law enforcement authorities, as a stick to whack us like a baby seal. And so I'd like to track back, you know, who that is, you know, and look at the federal government's role and the RCMP's role, who got $500 million of the $1 billion spent on security in what happened at the G20, as opposed to just focusing on the police themselves. And so the first thing is, you know, making sure G20 martial law never happens again. The second thing is stopping big corporations from poisoning us. We know, you know, they do. It's in the news all the time. CBC article recently, 90% of Canadians, you know, full of bisphenol A, you know, turning the boys into girls and turning the girls into breast cancer victims. And so this has to stop, you know, and what the city can do is the city can test things that we're suspicious of, just like the media does for news stories, only we can find solutions to it, whether it's bulk buying of, you know, health solutions or, yeah, taking everything out of the bottles that, that come into this city, putting them into new bottles that don't leak xenoestrogen, and so on. There's just, we can redirect the bureaucracy towards cleaning up our daily environments and stopping some of the causal effects of our fatigue or our stress, you know, or our illness. You know, third is the idea of cutting waste. All the candidates talk about this, except, you know, I've learned as a journalist over the last few years that when candidates talk about waste, they really mean theft. Because when somebody, you know, when George Smitherman was the head of e-health at the provincial level for the provincial government, and they quote unquote lost $1 billion, I don't think they lost it. Like, I don't think it was left, you know, behind somewhere at a Tim Hortons when they were on a road trip. I think that somebody got that money. And so, you know, we've got to be honest about what this is. To cut waste, I'd cut out the fluoride from our water supply. Costs $450 million a year. Montreal and Vancouver don't use it. And do they know something we should? I think so. And I think they know something that we do, because many people in Toronto do know that fluoride is not good for us. And so there just needs to be some sort of push to get it out so that, you know, we can stop using it. Even your dentist says spit it out. And maybe on the top of your teeth it works fine, like Ajax or Windex or any other cleaner or toothpaste. But we shouldn't be swallowing it. So there's a number of things I'd cut like that. I'd cut cops at construction sites where those people don't need any protection. Like, you know, even if you're in your car, you're not going to mess with six construction workers. So there doesn't need to be a cop there. If there's a guy with a yellow sign, stop. You know, let them direct you around, you know, whatever they're working on, and leave it at that. You know, anything in our city, I think, is our jurisdiction. If you don't like the big new, you know, G20 cop cameras in your neighborhood, let us know and we'll take them down, because we, you know, we think that you should have some control. If you don't like, you know, helicopters flying very low when they don't appear to be trying to save a life, you know, they're just sort of, you know, lazily flying low around the city and they're, you know, harassing condos and condo owners in this city, tell them to get up. Tell them to get, you know, a lot higher up there. If you don't like the 6-foot fences, you know, on Bloor Street, right now in the Uptown Fashion District, just a little bit west of Yonge, and you think, you know what, that's a little excessive, you know, fences that high, let's have them, you know, waist high. We don't need to be penned in like that, you know, with slow moving traffic beside us. You know, it just doesn't need to be that claustrophobic. Then these are all things that we can cut. These are all things that we can look at, and ultimately, I do a full and public audit of the city. The fourth campaign platform is encouraging people in Toronto to spend 1 hour, just 1 hour, I strongly say just 1 hour a week, staying in touch with your city, elected officials, city councilors, school board trustees, mayor's office, and city employees to help us resist the influence from corporate lobbyists, from other special interest groups, from international bodies, to give us a bit of cover fire so that, you know, we can let you know, what we're up to, and we'll know there's an audience there. You know, we're not going out on a limb, you know, and acting like a whistleblower and getting fired and maybe not getting the media coverage we should. We can actually say to the people, look, we have these international groups proposing these ideas. You know, what do you think? And so, you know, different people can take different interest levels in that. But I recommend if most adults in Toronto decide to spend 1 hour a week, then they can help get the Toronto they want. And finally, and this is an idea I've been testing since the summer of 2009. I really think that if these issues are seen as tough to deal with by some in our culture, then I think that, you know, more men should deal with them on behalf of women, children, and the elderly in this culture. I think that that's the way tribes have historically, you know, withstood attacks from outside for years. I think it's how we can, you know, withstand this attack on our country's sovereignty and by extension, you know, our city and the people in it from international institutions and multinational corporations. And I think we'd all feel better. I think men would feel better. I think we'd get more respect. And I think that women, children, and the elderly would appreciate it. And I know there's many great women, you know, fighting in this fight. I would never stop anybody from doing it, many doing it better than I do. So it's a non-issue when it comes to that. But I think the impetus, and this is not an official policy or law or mandate or anything, but the mayor, as the former mayor said in their conversation, the mayor has a bit of a bully pulpit. And so while I wouldn't, you know, be abusive about it, because I'd certainly get feedback if that was the case, I would certainly say that this is a good idea if, you know, just like we have for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, if men would help man up and defend this culture. And frankly, tough guys should not be afraid to look at what millions of nerds look at. You know, if you go online, you'll see the Obama deception, 7.5 million views. You'll see, you know, all these other movies, and Alex Jones is 1 million, 2 million listeners a day. And there's all these people out there looking into this information, and yet our socialization makes it tough to talk about. And we don't want to bring it up, and we certainly don't want to, you know, in many cases, have it ruin, you know, our good time. But there has to be a time and place for everything. And so, you know, we should find a time and place, all of us. But certainly I think men should and groups of men should find a time and place to deal with these issues, to address these issues. If there are any physical dangers involved, if you know, there's any sort of run-ins with the law that are unfortunate, we're more physically capable of handling those. And so, you know, I don't want anything bad to happen to anybody or any of us. And I've been treated, you know, very well by the city, by the people in the city, by the police in the city, who ID'd me several times during the G20, but were polite about it. Because I think people sense at this time in history that if you're coming from the right place and you're putting out, you know, a clear, simple, you know, message that is intending to help people, then you can get respect in this culture and you can get appreciation in this culture. And I've tried to prove that. And I think if we all do that a little more often, we could get some things done quick. So there's an idea of my basic campaign platform with, of course, a few details.
Yes, and very concise and precise, I should say. I just need about the media coverage, and it's like it's almost hard to break through. It's like you almost have to give the people the tools to get through the crust there that sort of blocks the flow of some kind of new information. Like, is the way the corporate media sort of just sort of cements the issues, and there's no wiggle room. It appears there's no wiggle room until you get some tools or something, some kind of like breath of fresh air, and then all of a sudden, you know, you can sort of start to understand what the real issues are, the ones that aren't really being dealt with by the corporate media.
Well, I'll say this, Shannon, on you know, on behalf of the media, just because, you know, and I'm a critic of the media like everybody is and like everybody should be. But my accurate criticism of the media is that there are definitely good people who work there. There's also not nice people who work there, just like, you know, at many other places. But everybody is essentially doing their jobs. And so, you know, when people say, why doesn't the media tell the truth, or why don't those journalists do it, or why didn't the cops disobey orders at the G20, and so on, I don't think any of us, you know, or who say that, or most of us who say that, wouldn't necessarily risk our jobs, you know, to make, you know, similar decisions or decisions where we work. And so there's a couple of things with respect to the media. If you do something, if you build it, they will come. And so, you know, whenever, you know, groups like Group Vancouver 9/11 Truth, whenever Toronto Truth Seekers, you know, whenever before them Toronto 9/11 Truth, whenever groups, you know, like this, who are normally not covered by the media and who the media goes out of their way to avoid, actually do something and get out in the streets, you know, hand out flyers and DVDs, then CBC's The National comes and covers this, you know, last year in September of 2009, to just basically do a piece on why people were opposed to the H1N1 vaccine. And before then, City TV did a piece on Toronto 9/11 Truth outside of their buildings, where they basically interviewed us and you know, put us on. And there's many, many, many examples of the media, you know, covering us when we do something. And so my argument is there's a fatalistic way to look at it, which is, when will they change? But after you see them doing what they do for a while, you kind of, you know, there's a limit to where that can take you. And so what can we do to change them? Or what can we do to work around them? And you know, personally, I've had good experience with the media recently for the campaign. CP24 interviewed me on video. It took a long time to put up the transcript. Still haven't put up the video. But again, I think people in there will try and do the best job they can. And then at the editorial level, closer to management, a lot of the information that isn't supposed to get out to a lot of people will be suppressed. But we just got to keep pushing, and we just got to make sure that we don't rely on them for information when we live in the 21st century with incredible, modern, fast ways of communication. So people can pass on my website, whatyouwantabelievein.com. People can download my flyers and drop them off in their neighbors' mailboxes, or hand them out at work, print them off and get them cut. You know, people can call me, 647-857-5755, and they can ask me questions. I can meet with them in groups. I've had to work on nuancing, you know, what I was going to say during the G20. I took a very, very aggressive, you know, stance on this issue to try and get people's attention quick, because I do perceive the city is in some danger as we head into 2012, not for superstitious reasons, just because that's when I think the UN sort of will emerge more as a world governance body, and the regional trading blocks created by, you know, trading agreements like NAFTA, the SPP, and the European Union, and so on, will be, you know, merged politically and economically, and that'll cause a lot of chaos and be the result of a lot of chaos. So I took a fairly aggressive stance, you know, during the G20 as an individual getting out there. And I had my stuff ripped down by the city workers. I was followed by cops and helicopters, not in a threatening way, but I do know that my words are wise, because from 3 to 8 p.m., I'm putting up posters on up from Yonge and College to Yonge and Davenport, east and west of Yonge, and I'm being followed. And then I walk back down south from, you know, at 8 p.m., and I find they've all been ripped down. And I'm like, wow, okay. And again, it was nothing personal, but it shows that the state doesn't want things like fluoride alert to get out there, vran.org, and so on. The information we have, Shannon, in a nutshell, on your show and others, is information that both the public can use and like, and that that threatens the existing power structure in ways that we can use to influence it.
All right. We're going to have to wrap up. I just wanted to sort of, I like the idea of the internet, 1 hour of, you know, participation by people. This is, you know, a fundamental basis of democracy, and it's something sadly lacking in what we call democracy. So, yeah, thank you for just mentioning that idea, and it would be worth a vote for Vijay Sharma to possibly get the real democracy going in the city.
There's a lot of smart people in this city, Shannon. We're smart and we're nice. And so if we have the opportunity, then I think we'll make the right choices.
Definitely, definitely. Again, thank you for coming down, VJ. Maybe we can get you back before the big day. And again, thank you for coming. I got to throw on a track, because we got to get some shifting going on here. But thanks again.
Thanks so much.
My turn.
The American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
I was sitting in my office daydreaming in the skies. I was startled back to life by a broken woman's cries. It was 7th of the 7th to 005, the day terror came home under London's grey skies. The carnage that I saw was like a dagger through the chest. So many different lives broken and bodies laid to rest. I knew I had to fight back, and for once I had a cause. They needed punishment for bringing war to our shores. Now I'm signed up and I'm living in the desert, staying psyched up, because these little bastards clever using roadside bombs instead of fighting like men, fighting terror with terror, till this terror shit ends. Three lines on my side, writing heart full of pride, can't shed no tears, though I watch my friends die. I know he fired first, but my soul's still on trial, even though he had a gun. Can't forget he's just a child, but no mercy for these pockets, every one of them can die. Shed the blood of my boys, now revenge is in my eyes, call it vengeance with a gun, ain't stopping till I'm done. Baby, terror is a war that can never be won.
It was sending their sons and their brothers and their husbands to fight and die in extraordinarily high proportion.
Playing in my school, but it ain't the same now. It all changed from the moment that them bombs came down. That's when I signed up, cause these people said they needed me. First time in my life, someone should believe in me. They greeted me with open arms, slugs and a rifle. Now I walk the line between death and survival. Hired as a killer by someone I've never met. He promised me prosperity, a life without regret. Now my whole family's dead with no one left to call a friend. My body is a weapon now, driven by revenge. Holding out my hand, but nobody there to help me, reciting the Quran, but my peers, they tell me God is on my side, so paradise awaits. Distorted information, how to reach some pearly gates. A man on a mission with nothing left to lose. They wanna leave my country, now it's battered and bruised. So I strap up, I only wish to sweat my fate, with my finger on the button, screaming that my God is great. I hold my last breath, taking everybody with me. Dead at 16, please Lord, forgive me.
His left heart's aching with guilt and minds distorted with irrationality. And the press generally won't tell us these things.
What's the price of war? Like bloody all pause. What's the point of freedom if your life ain't really yours? Give away your basic rights, cause you're paranoid and scared. There's a man in a suit.